We are glad to make all of our JCast Network podcasts free for our listeners. However, they are not free to produce and host. Please consider making a donation to JCast Network to help support our work by visiting jcastnetwork.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. This is the Rosh Hashanah edition of the Jewish Hour. In this half hour, we're going to be speaking with Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's. Sotheby's will be auctioning in mid-October a rare book called The Luzzatto High Holiday Machzer. This is something that was written in the 1300s. This is like, whoa. Anybody want to get me a birthday present? Starting bid, I think, is $4 million. Then we'll be talking about Rosh Hashanah in the second half of the show. We've got music sprinkled throughout. We may even throw a Rosh Hashanah tune in. We have a very poignant Hasidic story, one which has local ramifications. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. With sadness, we report that Sergeant Bar El-Hadaria Shmueli succumbed to his wounds sustained during riots along the Gaza border last week. Israel opened up a Chinese-run shipping port in Haifa geared to increase competition and the country's status as a trading nexus. A $2 billion bay has the ability to accept larger cargo ships. President Biden met with Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett after delays due to the crisis in Afghanistan. The two spoke about Iran, a possible two-state solution with the Palestinians, and other diplomatic issues. The European Union removed Israel and the U.S. from the COVID-19 safe travel list. That means if you had any plans of going to Italy or France or something like that, you might want to reconsider. While the EU recommendation is non-binding, travelers to the Union countries should be prepared to face tighter restrictions. In some good news, anti-Jewish hate crimes dropped 29% in 2021 from 953 to 676. Well, still 676 hate crimes. Anti-Jewish hate crimes still made up the majority of hate crimes in the U.S. Jews who won medals at the Paralympics this year, Israel's Iyad Shalabi, the first Israeli Arab to win a medal, won gold in the 100-meter backstroke. American Ian Seidenfeld upset the world number one player to win gold in table tennis. Israel's Mark Maliar won gold in the 400-meter freestyle and another gold in the 200-meter individual medley. In total, Israel won 9 medals. We will now hear Rosh Hashanah greetings from Israel's President Yitzhak Herzog.
We approach the new year, 5782, Taf Shin Pei Bet. I would like to extend my warmest wishes on behalf of the State of Israel and its people for a Shana Tova, Happy New Year, to you and your loved ones. The cyclical nature of Judaism allows us, the Jewish people, the opportunity to connect to our collective soul and to start anew. Each of us has the privilege to chart our own individual course, and yet, at the same time, we depend on each other, on our community, on our congregation, on the power of each of our tefillot, prayers. So, on this Rosh Hashanah, and as we are heading to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, I will be praying for the well-being of my immediate family, as well as my extended family, the people of Israel, and the Jewish people at large. I wish you all, dear brothers and sisters from around the world, a year of health and of coming together. Take care of each other, and know that Israel is your home away from home, and we are all looking forward to seeing you in our beloved country, Israel. May you all be inscribed in the Book of Life, and may you all enjoy a happy, healthy, and joyous New Year. Shana Tova Umetuka.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Sharon Mintz. She's the person in charge of rare books, manuscripts, and other Judaica-type things at Sotheby's Auction House in New York City. We're going to talk about something called the Luzzatto Machzer. How are you today, Sharon?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you again.
It is the pleasure, indeed, ours. We usually talk sometime around Hanukkah time, because that's when it seems that Sotheby's has been having its Judaica auctions, which makes sense because people do the Hanukkah gift thing. But this one's coming up earlier. It's coming in mid-October, just immediately after the holiday. So if somebody wanted to use this machzer, they'd have to wait till next year. So first of all, which I don't think anybody's going to do that anyway. But let's back up for the majority of the people actually listening to this show. What is a machzer?
All right. I'd be happy to explain. Machzor, or in plural, machzorim, comes from the term meaning cycle. Machzor means a cycle in Hebrew, and it is a collection of prayers for the cycle of the whole liturgical year. So it's the way in which Jews have created manuscripts that bring together the entire cycle of prayers from Rosh Hashanah through the end of the year. And usually there were two volumes. One volume would have the holidays of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and sometimes Sukkot, so the high holidays. And the second volume would have the spring festivals of Purim, Passover, and Shavuot, and maybe the fast days as well. And what we have coming up for sale, exhibition and sale, on October 19th at Sotheby's this year, is an incredible masterpiece, calligraphic masterpiece. It is an illustrated medieval Hebrew book of prayers, a machzor, that dates from the late 13th century. It was created in southern Germany, and we're able to tell the entire story of its history, where it moved to, over the hundreds of years of its existence, to a very close study of the text and the marginal notes that were added.
Okay, before we go to that, let's give a little more background. So Jews have had these machzors. Now, the Siddur was formulated by the men of the Great Assembly some 2,500 years ago, and I doubt, or I'd be really surprised, I'd be jumping up and down, if there was any such manuscript available from 2,500 years ago in the world anywhere?
No. Actually, the earliest known written Siddur that we have, that is known, dates to the 9th century. And it is now sitting in the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., and it was revealed, it was sold to them several years ago and has been carbon dated to the 9th century. That's the very earliest one that we have.
9th century means 800s. That's okay.
850, approximately 850 of the Common Era.
That would be like a Machzer Vitri, I would assume?
It's much smaller. It's earlier than that, and it has just basic prayers. It's a Machzer Vitri was created actually after that, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
It is not a Machzer Vitri.
So this is amazing. Then okay, that it's okay. So this is later than that. So we're talking here. This Luzzatto Machzor was, you're talking late 1300s. That's still before Gutenberg. So how was this?
Late 1200s. 1380s.
Okay,
exactly.
So this is 150 something years before Gutenberg. So how is this one done? How is it made?
Ah, okay. It's a good question. Well, first of all, I should say that if anybody's interested in seeing it, there is a website at Sotheby's that should be up later today with images that your listeners can go to and look at it. And if anybody is in the tri-state area between October 13th and October 18th, they're welcome to come into Sotheby's and see the volume itself. We'll have it on exhibition and be giving tours of the actual manuscript.
I'll be able to sit down and flip through the pages, right?
You actually can.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The nice thing about auctions. We're very open to buyers and people who come in are with supervision able to flip through the pages of this book. And the book, actually, the pages are not fragile because the book is handwritten on parchment, on animal skin. And animal skin parchment is the way in which manuscripts were created before the era of the printed book, where paper came into play. And it's a very, very durable strata on which to create a book, on which to write. And this particular book has 450 folios, and a folio, each folio is two pages, so it's about 900 pages. It's a very large book.
How much does this thing weigh?
It's heavy.
I would think so.
One of my associates at Sotheby's wanted to put it on a higher shelf, and I was like, I can't pick that off a higher shelf.
I would think it would weigh close to 40 pounds, I would think.
It's not 40 pounds, but it's a big book. It was created for the prayer leader, for the Chazan,
and it's
written
moving.
In large letters. Right. You didn't move it around a lot. You didn't have to pick it up and hold it.
Okay, so continue. So how was it made? So it's not paper, it's vellum, it's parchment.
It's parchment or vellum, right? And a scribe would have been commissioned either by the community or maybe by a wealthy private individual, because this was a communal property. This is not something that an individual commissioned and held in their home, or it might have been held in an individual's home, I should say, during the year to keep it safe. But it was considered a communal object, a ritual communal object. And once a scribe was commissioned, he would sit down and it would take him several months to write, 450 folios. This was not a one-month commission. This was many months and perhaps a year. Remember, they didn't have electricity. They could only work during the daylight hours. Even with candles, you'd be burning through quite a lot if you wanted to work in the evening. And then the scribe, in this particular case, highlights his name because on several occasions where the name Abraham, where the word Abraham appears, we see a little crown on top of it. So it's likely that the scribe's name was Abraham.
That's interesting.
We don't know more about it. We don't know more about him. But this was a way that the scribes kind of acknowledged their presence in creating the manuscript. They would either circle or highlight or do some sort of a decorative motif above their name. Mm-hmm. And he was also the artist of this manuscript, which is really quite interesting.
That is actually quite unusual, actually.
Yes, exactly. The Jews were not allowed, for the most part, into the artistic guilds in Europe in the medieval era. So they didn't have the wherewithal knowledge of how to apply gold leaf. But in this particular case, it's clear that the scribe was the artist of most of the illustrations because he's using a very distinct palette of green and red for some of the highlight Hebrew letters. And that same palette is used in the illustrations. So we think it's the same person. Yeah.
Okay. So let me ask you a really geeky question. What font is it written in? Is it written like a Torah or a mezuzah, for example, in the same style?
So that's a good question. No, it's not a geeky question. There are different fonts used in different parts of the Jews used around the world. So the Jews in Germany used what's known as an Ashkenazi script, and they had different types of script. They had a square script, which is what Torah scrolls are written in, and a semi-cursive script. And then they had a cursive script, a rounded script for writing. And this is written in a square Hebrew script. It's like the most formal. It's close to what Torah scrolls, a square Ashkenazi Hebrew script, I should say. It's close to what Torah scrolls would have been written in. It's very readable.
Uh-huh. Does it emulate the style of writing of German at the time? Kind of like, this looks like a German style writing.
So it is. It's kind of Gothic-y. Yes, it's closer to the German style. And we see, for example, that the Jews in Italy around the 15th century use a rounded Hebrew script that was close to the humanist script of Italy. So the Jews were emulating the scripts in the countries in which they lived and in that period. Mm-hmm.
Can we assume go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I said people who look at it online will easily be able to read the script if they read Hebrew.
Okay, understood. Okay, so can we assume that the scribe was indeed Jewish? I mean, when you said that the person...
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no question.
It was like a monk
Jewish.
Who knew Hebrew?
No. This was written by a very well-versed Jewish scribe, and basically 99% of the Hebrew manuscripts written in the medieval period were written by Jews. Uh-huh. They were sometimes illustrated by Christians, but they were in almost all instances. We have a couple of instances of Christians writing Hebrew manuscripts, but this is not one of them.
Okay, what indicates, I'm sorry, it sounds like an interrogation, but what indications do you have from it, Sharon Mintz from Sotheby's, that the Lusado Machzor was indeed written by a God-fearing Jewish person?
It's the way in which the Piyutim, the liturgical hymns, which make up a large portion of this manuscript, are written. And they're very carefully written, and it's someone who knew what they were doing and knew the customs. And let me go back a little bit, because I'd like to explain what I just mentioned. So you mentioned that the Jewish prayers were set at a very early stage, and certainly by the 6th century, by the time that the Talmud is written, compiled, I should say, the two main prayers, the Shema and the Shmona Esrei, the Shema and the 18 benedictions, the two main prayers are concretized, and we know that they, that they're in use and they're written, etc. Around this time, in order to embellish the prayer service, poets in Israel began to write liturgical hymns known as a piyut. In plural would be piyutim.
Okay. And like these hymns... Kind of like the word poet, I always thought.
Yeah, it is actually. I never thought of that. Kind of silly. Not to have thought of that, but it is. And these hymns were incorporated into the prayer service, in particularly in the Ashkenazic lands. And we still say many of them today. If you open up the Machzor for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you will see all kinds of liturgical hymns that are only said on these particular days. And every locale, every town, every region had their set of hymns. And sometimes you can localize a book based on the way, the groupings of hymns which are included and which aren't included, and the order in which they're included. My colleague, Shaul Seidler-Feller, did enormous amounts of research, reading through all the marginalia, and was able to localize this manuscript to an area known as Franconia. We don't use that term now. We call it Bavaria. It's basically northern Bavaria, the towns of Nuremberg and Bamberg and Würzburg, based on the Piyutim here. And they're written in such a careful way that it's very clear that the scribe knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay. Thank you for explaining that. Our guest today is Sharon Mintz. She is the rare book person at Sotheby's in Judaic, and we've welcomed her back again. We're talking about the Luzzatto Machzor, which will be up for auction on October 19th. We'll talk about the details of how to do that if you want to participate in that. Okay, so let's discuss. So this is illuminated, which means it's got nice little pictures on it, which is good if you got like a little kid standing there and they're getting bored during the long rush of Sunday services and you point at that picture. What kind of pictures are we talking about, Sharon?
So there are a group of pictures which all depict the blowing of the shofar. And there's one further picture of a man wrapped in a prayer shawl holding a Torah scroll, while another little picture on that page shows a man blowing a shofar. And there's one image of a congregant with the word Amen coming out of his mouth. They're very, very charming. And your listeners who go on the Sotheby's website by later this afternoon, or certainly by the time this airs, should be able to see these pictures. They are all there on the website. And the shofar blowing images are quite interesting because arguably the blowing of the shofar is the highlight of the Rosh Hashanah davening. It's obligated. It's an obligation from the Bible to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is actually called Yom Terurah, the day of the trumpeting, the day of, right? Mm-hmm. And we now sound in many customs and many synagogues is 100 sounds of the shofar. Different communities have different customs. And we see four different images of a man with his foot on one stool. One foot raised on a stool as his shofar is raised towards the heavens so that the sounds of the shofar, of the trumpeting, will ascend to heaven and will awaken. The shofar has many different purposes. The Sajagon lists 10 different purposes for the blowing of the shofar. Some of them are directed toward the listeners to awaken their hearts to repent. And some of them are directed towards God, that he may remember his mercy towards Isaac when he substituted a ram. We often use a ram's horn for the shofar and spared him. And he should awaken God's mercy towards the Jewish people. And there's a folk custom, certainly in the medieval period, to put the shofar blower puts his leg on a stool. And there are different reasons given for this. Some say it's to raise it up higher. And some say it's to place a barrier between the shofar and the ground, because there's this idea, or there was in the medieval period, that the Satan might come and try to interfere with the prayers of the Jews and with the shofar blowing. And this disconnect between the ground and the shofar will serve as a form of protection, that actually the shofar blowing will be effective. It's an interesting custom.
This is wonderful. Okay, so let's get a brief. We're running out of time, really. It's just, I could probably spend the whole show on this. But okay, so this it's in Bavaria, 1200s. Let's do a quick history of its travels. Where did it go from Bavaria?
Okay, very quick history. In Bavaria, unfortunately, in the 1290s, we have a series of massacres called the Rindfleisch Massacres, where there was a moment where the attention of the ruling authorities was turned away. They were involved in their own political struggles, and a knight by the name of Rindfleisch instigated massacres based on accusations of host desecration, a longer discussion against the Jews, false allegations, I might add. And thousands of Jews died at that time. That's probably the moment in which this Machzor travels, and it goes to Alsace. And we know that because there are notes on the side of the page by a hand who indicates that he is from France. And he also says, you know, this is what we say in, this is what the Jews from France say. So he might not have been in France at the time, but he certainly was aware of the French Jewish customs. And this is added not in the main body of the text, but a marginal note on the side as the manuscript is moving. And then we have another note later on in the manuscript, also on the side, which says, this is what we say in Constance. And Constance is a region near the North Alps. It's between Switzerland and Germany. And one of the things that it lists is the group of piyutim, of liturgical hymns, which are said in Constance. And one of them is a hymn in memory of the martyrs of the Jews who died because of the massacres after the Black Death in 1348, when the Jews were accused of poisoning the wells. And there was a whole group of hymns that were composed in their memory. So we know by 1348, it was, or after, thereafter, it was in the Lake Constance region. Then it descends to Italy. We find it in Italy because the Machzor shows areas of censorship, self-censorship. The Jews in Italy were required in the 16th and 17th and even into the 18th century to submit their books to church censorship, after which they were returned when the offending passages were taken out. And the offending passages could be areas where the Jews pray for the destruction of their enemies. Remember, this is a book which moved around likely because of all of the massacres that were occurring in the medieval period. And in this particular instance, we believe that the book was self-censored by a Jew who didn't want someone else coming in and crossing things off. So offending passages were either scraped off or covered over in ink. And then we next find it in the collection of the great rabbi Samuel David Luzzatto, who lived in Padua. And he purchased it sometime between 1848 and his death, which was in 1860. And it was purchased after his death by the Alliance Israelite Universelle. And they are selling it now because they are very, they're primarily involved in education and furthering education, Jewish education. They had a whole series of schools that were set up in the 19th century throughout Europe and North Africa and the Far East. And they now maintain still many schools, and they are looking to that this money will go to benefit educational programs.
Okay. Where was the book hidden during the Holocaust? Do we know?
The book had been looted during the Holocaust and taken by the Germans, and then was restituted after the war and returned to the Alliance.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a story probably in and of itself, but we're not going to go there. But that is yes. Amazing that happened. Okay, so the auction is October 19th. It'll be in person and online, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. What time about will it be?
It will be 11 a.m.
11 a.m.
People can watch online.
Mm-hmm. And do we know what the opening bid will be?
The estimate for the Machzor is $4 million to $6 million, which is approximately the price that medieval illustrated manuscripts have been selling for. Sotheby's sold several years ago a Bible from Spain that was estimated at approximately the same amount. And also the Steinhardt Mishneh Torah was sold in 2013 to the Israel Museum, jointly to the Israel Museum and the Metropolitan Museum of Art, for approximately that estimate. Okay, so I don't know what the opening bid will be, but that is the estimate.
Uh-huh. So while we were talking, I was sitting and figuring that if this work were to be made today, so it would probably cost upward above $1 million with all the materials and the labor and the gold and... So, but then put it back that it's 800 years old. So it's really for inflation. So it's really, it might even be considered a bargain at $4 million.
it's It's not an aggressive estimate. No, I think at $4 million it actually is a bargain, but, you know.
Okay, and if anybody wants to get me like an early Hanukkah present, I'm putting it out there that but this is not something somebody's going to sit there and pray from. So it's, but I'm geeky enough that
you never know. People sometimes, you know, private individuals, this might go to an institution. It's in beautiful condition. It has pristine provenance. There are none others. There are only about 20. There are fewer than 20 illustrated medieval Hebrew prayer books from Ashkenaz, mm-hmm. And none are in private hands.
Mm-hmm. How is it bound? Sharon? Is it like a big leather?
It is in a modern. It's called Morocco. It's in an ivory Morocco modern binding. So it's cleanly bound, but not in its original binding.
It's not the original binding. Is the original binding like sort of like was it bound into the new binding?
Or? No, we do not have the original binding.
Okay, that's wonderful. That's going to do it. Again, if you're interested, it'll be on the Sotheby's website, which I'm assuming is Sotheby's.com. And
yes.
And it'll be up and you can peruse it over there. The auction is October 19th, and we're talking about the Luzzatto Machzor. And we want to thank you, Sharon, for coming on, and we'll see what's doing the end of December, what Sotheby's is offering. We might bring you back again.
I would like to say one last thing for your listeners, that we will not have a Judaica sale in December. We will have that in June of this year, mid-June. There'll be a very large Judaica sale in June. We're trying to shift the Judaica sales to June. However, there will be an online sale of Hanukkah menorahs beginning November. So if one of your listeners decides that they wanted to gift you a Hanukkah menorah, check back online at Sotheby's. We will have a selection for sale early November.
Okay, so
time for Hanukkah.
We want to wish you Shana Tova and continued success, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Shana Tova, to you and to all your listeners. Be well. A sweet and successful year.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Want assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Harris Schulfinman, you're listening to The Jewish Hour. That was amazing. I'm chomping at the bit just to even get a look at it. We have up now, for your listening pleasure, let's do some music. This is Eighth Day. It's called Wake Up Yidden, and that's what we're supposed to do. This is like, listen, Rosh Hashanah, you're supposed to like get your act together. Hello, Wake Up Yidden.
Let's open our eyes. Wake up, Yidden. Wake up, Yidden. Let's dance these colors goodbye. Wake up, Yidden. Wake up, Yidden. Get up, let's open our eyes. Wake up, Yidden. Wake up, Yidden. Let's dance these colors goodbye. La la la.
the new year approaching, why go anywhere else for your holiday shopping when you can go to The Grove? Fully renovated, The Grove is located on Greenfield Road, just south of 696. At The Grove, you'll find the largest selection of kosher foods and wines in Michigan. Looking for fresh, round holiday challahs, honey cake, or exotic fruit for the new year? The Grove has it. The Grove has the freshest produce, gourmet dairy, deli, and meats. They even have a kosher bakery and hot takeout right on the premises. It's The Grove on Greenfield Road and 696 for all your shopping needs. Herschel Finman here, listening to the Jewish Hour. A little klezmer music for you. What's it really all about is we're working towards an end game. And that end game is called the Geula, the redemption. That's when Mashiach comes, the worlds are perfect, we don't have to worry about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur anymore. We don't have a lot of worry about a lot of things. So, this is the Klezmatics. Zol Shoin Komen de Geula. It should already happen already.
Soll je taffen Herzen macht men alle Chaim Oi, der Ruhm mit los mit Ruhen singen mir alle Sind die Zocken bis zum Rumpfen Loh mit trinken Mai Mein Chaim ist da Chaim Was da hat der Jid Oi, so schön kommen die Gehule Oi, so schön kommen die Gehule Oi, so schön kommen die Gehule Mashiach kommt schon bald Oi, so schön kommen die Gehule Oi, so schön kommen die Gehule Schön kommen die Gehule, Mashiach kommt schon bald. Sizador von Kulle Chayiv sagt mir Kenaronim und von Sindigen Mashiach Kirche kommen wird. Ach du Tatelen, Himmels beten, dreh Rachmoni, seh ich mich hier, soll nicht kommen, ab ist er letzte Spät. Oh, so schön kommen die Gehule, oh, so schön kommen die Gehule, oh, so schön kommen die Gehule, mich hier kommt schon bald. So schön kommen die Gehule, oh, so schön kommen die Gehule, oh, so schön kommen die Gehule, mich hier kommt schon bald.
Things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be. Its old-fashioned, clear, crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. We want to welcome back Franklin Cider Mill, the 26th year that they've been our seasonal sponsor, and they are seasonal because they're only open up from Labor Day till Thanksgiving. That's this week. So if you're listening to this podcast, it's open already, and most likely there's a good chance that I've already got some already because I got kids coming home. I have children that are returning back to the roost, and they have requested Franklin Cider because, as the Finman children say, everything else is just juice. We have time for one more song. This is a Rosh Hashanah song. It's Avinu Malkeinu. This is one of the classic liturgical melodies. This was done by zillions of great voices throughout the decades. This one is very recently done by Shulam Lemmer, who has a very sweet voice, and it just means Our Father, Our King. There's an opiate epidemic, but Advanced Rapid Detox has a solution for people addicted to pain pills, heroin, and dependent on Suboxone and Methadone. Advanced Rapid Detox performs detox under sedation in the hospital. Patients sleep through withdrawals and wake up without cravings. Dr. Julia Aronoff and the staff at Advanced Rapid Detox help people restore their lives and the lives of their families. Addiction affects everyone, even in the Jewish community, and Advanced Rapid Detox is there to help. Call 800-603-1813 That's 800-603-1813, or visit them online at www.advancedrapiddetox.com. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Monday night, Tuesday, Wednesday, ends Wednesday night, is Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. I was surprised in listening to Yitzhak Herzog, the president of Israel's Rosh Hashanah greetings, the way he said, Happy New Year! It's like, because that's, we do wish people a happy and healthy New Year, but it's sort of like, the happy part is like cradled with the healthy part, because many, many older women have told me when I'm visiting them in the hospital, Rabbi, when you got your health, you got everything. So we're couching it in those terms, and it's not, we're not staying up till midnight, because after the holiday, the New Year begins at sundown, so we don't have to stay up till midnight. And we're in the opposite of getting partying all night and doing that, but we're in the synagogue praying. We have a special prayer book with lots of special prayers, to hopefully that we're praying to the Almighty. Like, the really the thing that we really want is to get us to the next year. We did this last year. And we can say the same thing about Yom Kippur. And the Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur is such a special day that if there's Jews who go to synagogue just once a year, they go Yom Kippur. Because you go to Shul Yom Kippur, you go to synagogue Yom Kippur, you get forgiven. And we have in the prayer book all the possible sins that a person could do, we ask forgiveness for. And there's never any new things added from one year to the next. It's like, here's this year's sins that we're asking forgiveness. No, it's the same ones that we've been asking forgiveness for 2,500 years. And here we are. We're here again. What are we doing? Are we fooling ourselves? Are we trying to fool God? That's going to be a tough one. And if we are trying to fool ourselves, like, big deal. So what? What do we accomplish? The holiday of Rosh Hashanah requires two things. There's a mitzvah, and then the mitzvah is actually a medium for the second thing. The mitzvah is hearing the sound of the shofar. You don't have to blow shofar. In fact, the blessing which is said is commanded us to hear the sound of the shofar. So you just have to hear the shofar. And by the way, you have to hear the sound of the shofar specifically, not some electronic representation, not on Zoom, not, it has to be right there, right in front of you. And for those people who are interested, if you're listening and it's still before Rosh Hashanah, so on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, which is Wednesday, Jewish Ferndale will be having an outdoor shofar blowing service. The whole thing takes 10 minutes, maybe that long. And that'll be at 7 o'clock, and people will be gathering in the backyard. We will provide masks for people who need masks or want masks, don't have their own masks. They're not required because it's outdoors still. We encourage social distancing. We want people to be safe, but we want people to do the mitzvah of hearing the shofar. And like I say, you get a tune in some temple's party online. Yeah, it doesn't cut it. Sorry. It's got to be real. Let's make this year real. But what's it all about is, why are we blowing the shofar? It's to arouse us to accept God as king. Again, like the song indicates, Avinu Malkeinu, listen, if you're our father, then you have to take care of a father like a father takes a kid. And if you're our king, then a king has servants. The whole purpose of the king is to protect the servants. You have to take care of us, God. So it's sort of like to arouse us and to arouse the Almighty as well. This is what we're trying to do on Rosh Hashanah. So what it means getting written in the good books. This is what's being judged on Rosh Hashanah. I mean, when I'm walking to synagogue, so people tell me, they see obviously I'm Jewish, and they'll tell me, Happy New Year. And my response to them is, same to you. Because God's judging the entire creation right down to the smallest entity, little subatomic particle. It's all being judged. What's going to happen to it in the year 5782? I can kind of guess what's going to happen next, and that's going to be, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and be back with a dynamic Hasidic story. Don't go away. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Specs Howard. The Specs Howard School of Media Arts is proud to have been a sponsor of The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding comes from its sponsors, listeners like you help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. That's 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. Your help is greatly appreciated. Thank you very much.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com. There you will find, if you're listening to the podcast, you're already there. If you're listening at ryanrabbifinman.com, because you have all the podcasts that are there. So you can click right down to the donations page. You have to wait for you have to pause the podcast, I think. And then go to the donations page, which is really what we're getting to. But there's other things on the website, and you can contact me, and it'll be all right. And speaking of donations, so August hasn't been paid yet. We're still worrying that. Sometimes we get a little behind, especially in the summertime, but as I always say, it's better to be a little behind than a big behind. So August is always slow. People are on vacation. They're not giving, but you know, we're in the season of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Try to get those charitable donations in. Send your donation that way via rabbifinman.com or stick it in an envelope and send it to The Jewish Hour, 1725 Pinecrest Drive, Ferndale, Michigan, 48220. This story involves a former Detroiter who passed away in 2016. His name was Shmuel Kaufman, of blessed memory. He was a teacher at the Beth Yehuda School for Boys for 55 years. Came as a young man, not even married. And that's exactly the point. Is he eventually did get married, and he was married for about 5 years and did not have any children, which is a point of consternation. Especially if you're talking 50 years ago, because they didn't do a whole lot for people who didn't have kids then. So he was friends with Rabbi Avtsin, who was blessed memory also, who was a leading figure here with a Lubavitcher, and said, you should go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and ask for a blessing. So the Rebbe, in private audience, asked him, did you ever get everybody upset that you didn't ask forgiveness for? He said, no. And the Rebbe asked again, perhaps there was a girl that might have been miffed that you didn't propose to her? And he said, no. And at this point, Rabbi Avtsin said, if the Rebbe asked you a second time, you should think really hard. And he thought, he did go out on a date a couple times. At one of the dates, the girl was getting cold, so he gave her his sweater to wear to keep her warm. And she thought that that was sort of like, you know, making like an advance and a seriousness. But I broke it off and I never told her about it. And I just went through the matchmaker and said, I'm not interested. She's not for me. So the Rebbe told him that you should find her and ask her forgiveness. And this is maybe a block, maybe some sort of impediment to you having children. And he said to the Shmuel Kaufman, said to the Rebbe, what if she doesn't want to forgive me? He said, tell her that it'll remove the impediment for her getting married as well, because she's not married. How does the Rebbe know all this? We don't know. So he said, how am I supposed to find her? I don't know who she was. He says, you'll find her. Don't worry. So he started working in a couple of days, and he managed to find a number of her brother. And he called up the brother and said, I'd like to speak to her. I have something very important to talk to her about. And the brother said, she's right here, and she doesn't want to talk to you. She said, please, I must meet with her. And he told, explained the situation. He was just coming from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And they met, and she did not want to forgive him. She said, what you did to me and the way you treated me, I don't forgive you. And he said, Lubavitcher Rebbe said that if you forgive me with a full heart, that it'll help you in finding your match. So she thought for a while and she said, okay, I forgive you with a full heart. A month went by, she got engaged, and 3 months went by, and she discovered that his wife was pregnant, and they all lived happily ever after. There's an additional part to that story, in that it says that the Rebbe asked him, do you tell stories of righteous people? And he says, no, it's a waste of time. He said, the Rebbe said to him something like, your students won't remember the Talmud that you teach them, but they will remember the stories. And that's what Shmuel Kaufman was known for. He's known as this storytelling rabbi. That's going to do it. We want to thank you very much for tuning in, for listening this whole entire year. We wish you that you be written and inscribed in the Book of Life for a happy and a healthy 5782, and that we see that all blessings be bestowed upon you, and that we continue together, and we, the Jewish Hour, have a chance to continue educating a bit and entertaining you a bit. And we'll see you next year. Take care.